Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On, Snakes on a Plane, and Other Bad Movies, Why We Like Them. For more information about the links and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Geeks On!
There, my friends.
We are back for another exciting adventure and episode and novelization.
And novelization?
And
a
everything
podcast,
else.
Adaptation of the podcast of the book based on the comic, based on the movie, based on the folklore legend.
Of Geeks On.
Yes.
My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
I am Donald Marshall. I am a professional, I am a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
You're professional. My name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Peter Robinson, and I am a screenwriter and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
No Flory this week, sadly.
Yes, he is sitting in his mini mansion with all of his cool toys, which we did go see.
It was
How was that?
Cool.
I didn't get to go see it.
Oh.
It was very cool.
It was really neat.
You go into his house, which, by the way, I thought we were going to be the only ones in there. But you go into his house, he just opens his door.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And it's like a real cluttery house. Like, yeah. Like a just cluttery house. And then you like look at the clutter and you go, holy crap.
Yeah, you realize that each and every item of the clutter it's not like a treasure, you know?
Yeah. It's like someone's messy house that when you focus on it, you find a piece of gold every time. Like, yeah. There's Dracula's cape. Holy crap. Oh, look over there. There's a letter by Stephen King when he was 12.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look over there. I mean, it's like just, it's crazy. So we did take pictures, which we will try to put up, I guess, as soon.
There's a letter from Stephen King when he was 12?
Or something like that, yeah. It's like, hey, yeah.
Was he still creepy? Was he talking about killing his teacher?
I didn't actually read it. It was like, felt kind of wrong for some reason. I don't know why.
He applied to one of Forey's magazines at 12, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See?
So that was cool. We're going to try to get pictures up. We got a picture with him there as well and a lot of the cool stuff. So anyway, we'll post that. Some of the geeks, at least part of the Geek Week here, we went to a Games Day.
Games Day SoCal.
Games Day SoCal. We'll probably talk more about gaming groups a little bit later give it a full topic. But
I'll probably sacrifice some of my news stories to talk about some of the games we played.
Okay, cool. There was quite a bit of people there. There was like 50 people at this place.
They actually had two different floors fully populated.
Yeah, you know, and everybody.
Of a moose lodge.
Of a moose lodge.
Of a moose lodge?
Of a moose lodge.
They rent out a moose lodge.
With actual mooses.
Yeah.
Moosei hanging from the walls.
But the cool thing is that everyone
staring.
Everyone brings a stack of
staring.
Games. And
what type of games?
Any games. Whatever you want. And then they put it on a big table. They write down the games that they owned. And then you just walk up and grab somebody else's game. And you can play whatever,
With it's sort of an honor system that'll go back.
How do you get? Yeah, how do you get your game back?
You just make sure it gets back on the table.
Huh.
It seems to work. They've been doing it for years. I think they got a good group of people, and so no one's stealing anything.
I won a board game.
Yeah, that's right.
I did.
How did you win a board game?
They have like a drawing every week.
You didn't win at something.
No,
I thought you like whooped somebody's ass.
I'm sort of used to being like at least second in every board game I play.
Right,
and I had my ass handed to me repeatedly over the course of the day.
Some of these gamers, there's some hardcore gamers there.
Mm-hmm.
There's some newbies and some hardcore gamers. And Peter and I got stuck in a shit-ass five-hour game.
Yeah,
but
I knew that was
for those of you out there who are in places where there aren't many gamers, look into game days.
Yeah.
It's possible that you may have a board game gatherer near to you once every month, every 2 months, something like that. And go out, meet some new people, learn some new games, have some fun.
And we'll talk about later. We're going to have a whole how to get a group together, how to start a games day, how to get a gaming group together. We're going to talk about that later in a future podcast.
Later in the show?
No, later. I think we should do a whole topic on it.
Okay.
Building a gaming group. Yeah. Anything else happen?
Well, I have big news. Big sad news. Sad big news.
You're getting married.
No, yeah, I'm getting married.
Does Kat know?
She doesn't know yet. I am not going to be Illidan.
Oh!
Blizzard called me up and offered me to do... It said they wanted me for Illidan for the upcoming Burning Crusade.
For Warcraft expansion.
For Warcraft expansion. And they wouldn't do my rate. They wouldn't pay me enough money. And there were a bunch of issues with the unions that I'm in, and so I couldn't do the job unless it was union, and they won't go union.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the video game industry and the movie, television, film industry are colliding, and that's all being worked out right now. And unfortunately, it just means that there are some times when it just doesn't work.
Well, it's very interesting right now. Like, I'm looking at the rates that some SAG, the SAG rules force people to pay.
Yeah.
And the smaller video game companies just can't afford some of
those. Oh, they're dumb. Oh, they're really dumb.
They just can't afford it.
Yeah. Welcome to SAG. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah.
And then have all of us seen...
On the plus side, though, I snuck into the archives for the audition tapes for the video game company I work for now.
Uh-huh.
And I got to listen to a whole bunch of non-union voiceover guys' auditions.
Yeah.
Right? And they're good. I was really genuinely surprised at some of the quality that they have in there.
No, that's good.
Yeah, there's some real talent out there waiting to be tapped. So there is still hope. Video games need not suffer. And then eventually SAG will realize, oh, we're losing a whole lot of work because of this.
Yep.
I'd tap that talent. You know what I mean?
Tap that talent right
now
where
I
it
feel
hurts.
Dirty.
We also, I think all of us, we all saw snakes on the motherfucking plane.
Well, almost. I hope so. We're all talking
almost
about
all
it.
Of us.
Almost all of us.
Almost all of us.
Oh,
not you.
Oh,
I had to go away on my 3-year anniversary this weekend.
Oh,
how dare you!
Damn
you
it!
You letting that get away with your geek? How?
I was.
What about dare the other you? 5 days?
I know exactly.
How dare you? Anyway, we'll talk about it later. But that was part of our geek week.
I do, however, have a little ode to snakes on a plane, which I will do as one of my news stories.
Okay. Should we get to news, or do we have anything else?
I think we should.
Let's hit it!
Man, that news music.
All right, Matt, why don't you give us some news?
All right. A Russian mathematician has refused to accept this huge math prize, which he won. Did you hear about this?
This is the guy who recently solved an unsolvable...
An unsolvable riddle. It's been around for over 120 years. Reclusive Russian won an academic prize Tuesday for work towards solving one of history's toughest math problems, but he refused to accept the award. A stunning renunciation of accolades from the top minds in his field. Grigory Perelman, 40-year-old native of St. Petersburg, was praised for his work in the field known as topology, which studies shapes, and for a breakthrough that might help scientists figure out nothing less than the shape of the universe. But besides shunning the medal, academic colleagues say he also seems uninterested in a separate $1 million prize he might be awarded for this feat, which proved a theorem about the nature of multidimensional space that has stumped people for over 100 years. The Fields Medal was announced at the International Congress of Mathematicians, an event held every 4 years, this time in Madrid. There were a bunch of other people named, but he just didn't show, said that wasn't his gig. He won't release why he won't show. But, you know, he just chose not to do it.
You know what? Listen, we all know that there's some odd geeks out there.
Yeah.
And they're antisocial.
No.
Some of them are antisocial. No. Some are just, they just don't want to kind of...
When you go to the link of this guy, he looks like Peter. He looks like Peter if Peter was locked in an attic for about 25 years and worked on a math
problem. Now that you mention it, I never actually have seen Peter and the Nobel Prize Committee in the same place at the same time.
That's true.
It might be me.
Yeah, but seriously, like eyebrows, facial hair going wild. It's Peter, though.
Wow.
Looks just like Peter. The riddle Perelman tackled is called a Poincare conjecture, which essentially says that in three dimensions, a donut shape cannot be transformed into a sphere without ripping it. Although any shape without a hole can be stretched or shrunk into a sphere. So work on that, all right?
Well, the million bucks is still out there. You know what? 10 years from now, he's going to go, what the hell
was I
thinking?
Work on that math problem when you're like collecting Social Security.
Yep.
All righty. Strange.
Hit it, Chewy.
I assume that means the hairy one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Peter. Chewy.
I wonder if Matt and I might have brought the same news story here.
Which one?
This one is snakes in a motherfucking cinema.
Oh, I saw this. This is bad.
So recently in a premiere of Snakes on a Plane, Life imitated art when they found that someone had released two live diamondback rattlesnakes in the theater.
This was in like Texas, right?
This is not my news story.
This was in Arizona.
Oh, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah. Do you have the follow-up to this?
Oh,
no, I don't.
I haven't heard the follow-up.
The follow-up was released today. This was a hoax. The news story is a hoax.
It was
and
on the...
it was done as a publicity stunt.
Four snakes on a motherfucking plane?
I don't know. I didn't read the article.
It was a local theater. Do you think the local theater did it as a
public? I have no idea.
Because it was on the local news.
I didn't read the article. It just said, snakes released in theater a hoax.
Wow. We should look that up because I saw that as well today.
Because I just clicked on the article like right now on the web, and there's no follow-up with it. So
what's
I,
the date I, on the article?
Article is
Don's challenging
today.
Peter live right now here at Geeks On. You're
we'll
witnessing
have to
it.
See.
Cage match.
We will have
two
to
geek
see.
Enter one geek.
But
leave.
They found one of the snakes in the parking lot and one of the snakes inside the theater.
Or did
two
they?
Diamondback rattlesnakes.
Or were they?
We'll check up on that as well and post on our forums because I know someone already put that link up this morning. So,
by the way, guys, we're all supposed to talk about GeekCon. There has been much new ado on the forum about us
We'll talk about that possibility at the end.
Geeks on Con.
All right, here's my news story. I've got two video game news stories. Okay. One, there is a rumor / hearsay that the Wii is going to be way less expensive than even we originally thought. The Nintendo Wii
is way
II. Apparently, the manufacturing cost has been leaked out that it's very inexpensive, way less expensive than they originally thought it was going to be. And apparently, an Electronic Arts executive, an EA executive, let it slip that they thought it was going to be about $170. That's in That's in Japanese money. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, 170 yen?
No, it's whatever the yen it is translating to $170.
Oh, okay.
So obviously 170 is not a number that would be sold here in the United States.
A little more for shipping.
So they'll probably, it'll probably be like
$200.
$199, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But we were all thinking it was going to be about $250. But,
no, my money was on $200 for the Wii.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. I mean, you could buy three of them for the price of the PlayStation. So these guys may have something going on. There may
now,
be
you
a
and I got into a fight over the price of the PlayStation, whether or not people are going to buy it when it comes out.
People will buy it.
It's going to be sold out. I guarantee the PlayStation 3 will
only
be sold out.
Only if they underproduce.
No.
Wait until my next article.
How many parents in this economy are going to go $600 for a game system for my kids?
Hello.
It's America.
Video game players are between 25 and 35 right now.
Yeah.
You don't need
absolutely.
Parents.
But there is also the extremely lucrative under 18 market, you can't tell me that these people don't target as well.
You can't tell me the Xbox 360 sold out to parents who bought the device for their kids. Look. Parents did not wait in line for their kids.
It was also not $600.
Every day I see kids, bicycling around Los Angeles on Trek mountain bikes, and Trek mountain bikes are $600. It's not like they're not
going
to spend
it. Yeah, and these
it.
Are parents going like, for God's sakes, we've got to get the kid out of the house and do some exercise.
I guarantee you, you will not be able to get a PlayStation for 6 months.
I think it's going to sell.
It's going to drop off.
The only reason why I think that would happen is if they underproduce.
Well, they are going
to
underproduce. That again. All right, Peter, we'll get to we'll talk about that part in my next article.
Donnie.
Peter?
Donnie, hit it. This way.
We're going.
You just seem so confused.
We usually go this way. So
we've got a weird energy going tonight. Anybody else feel that in the air?
Yes.
Don.
Okay.
Are there snakes in the motherfucking studio?
We can't all be 40 episodes. all right. A UK spammer gets a 2-month curfew for crashing his ex-employer's servers and causing $55,000 worth of damage.
He gets a curfew?
A judge has condemned him to a 2-month curfew. Between the hours of 12:30 a.m. and 7 a.m. on weekdays and 12:30 a.m. and 10 a.m. on weekends. If he breaks this curfew, he risks a more serious sentence. The curfew has been timed so as not to interfere with Lennon's work at a local cinema. The judge said it was a happy coincidence that will end the day before Lennon starts college in September.
So it's a house arrest.
No. Well, it's a house arrest between the hours of 12:30 a.m. and 7:30 a.m.
I think most house arrests are like that. Most house arrests allow you to go to work.
Okay. But he can does work last for... how many? What is that? That's 14 hours a day?
At a cinema, it goes till 12:30.
Okay, you're right. That's bizarre.
This is a slap on a wrist for $55,000 worth of damage. That lost traffic and business.
That's crazy.
And he maliciously crashed the computer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, an ex-employer.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on the one hand, I'm kind of like, he's 18 years old. What are you going to do? But... it's $55,000 worth of damage.
Well, yes, he's lucky there's not a civil suit.
We'll have a civil suit. That's how that
kid's 18. How are they going to squeeze money out of an 18-year-old who works at a movie theater?
You sue their parents.
Yeah, 18.
Aren't they emancipated at 18?
You might be right.
I don't think you can sue their parents anymore.
We'll see.
I'm going to take your PlayStation 3 from you, boy.
All right, so we'll put the article up. Go check it out. Tell us what you think.
Now, since we will be doing the drawing at the end of the episode, I knew we probably wouldn't be able to do links, but I thought these two links were so freaking funny and cool.
What drawing are you talking about, Matt?
Why, the George R.R. Martin Game of Thrones game drawing, Don.
Why, the one we advertised in our interview with George R.R. Martin episode 2 episodes ago?
Absolutely, Don.
Wow.
Wow. Anyway. So these are the two links. First of all, Heinz is trying to get on, Heinz as in ketchup Heinz, is trying to get on the internet geek savvy thing. So now if you go to myheinz.com, you can make your ketchup label say anything you damn well want it to.
And they'll mail it to you.
So you can be like, you know, class of 2006, or will you marry me, or...
It's like the wine people have been doing that for a little while.
On your ketchup.
And I think Heinz has been doing this for a few years now.
They're advertising it now all over the internet.
Why the hell would anybody want personalized ketchup?
I don't know.
You could do it for, like, special
effects.
Hey,
that's my ketchup.
We can put, like, vampire blood, vampire blood.
Yeah.
Okay, that's about it.
Okay.
They should just sell that one.
Exactly.
That one thing.
The other one is a new Xbox 360 app, which I thought a lot of people good. It's from Digimask, and it lets you take a couple of pictures, full front and profile, of yourself, and then map your face onto your game character's head.
It will do that.
It will do that. So you can then make any of your characters within a game look like you.
I don't understand how it can do that. You'd have to get into the Xbox 360 coding.
Hey, go look at the link.
I don't think that's
actually conceivably not that hard, but making it apply to all programs could be difficult.
If you hack the program,
yeah.
Go look at it.
All right, I'll
go check it out.
All right. Cool. That sounds cool.
Don't you want to have your face on your Splinter Cell?
Well, they are doing that with...
Can I have my face on my Heinz?
Yes, you can have your face on my Heinz.
Gee, I wonder why...
I'm not comfortable with this episode.
The Xbox 360 camera is coming out in the next month, if you don't already have it, because, you know, it's been released in certain...
It's specifically for the Xbox 360 camera.
People are going to be playing Strip Halo and...
Oh, yeah.
It's not right.
Strip Uno. You know that's going to...
Oh,
by the way, if... Oh, man, this will probably be too late, but I'll try to get this episode out. Texas Hold'em released today, which is the Xbox Live arcade game. It's free for 24 hours, so make sure you go home and download it.
Oh, God.
Because there's no reason not to. Yeah. After that, it's going to cost $10. So when you go home, make sure you download Texas Hold'em. We can play poker
for free.
So if we have this episode out, go run to Xbox Live before.
Pete, you're going to get your Xbox 360 back, and it's going to be full.
You can delete it.
I've downloaded one game.
All right, Peter.
So I just got to say, I have the hiccups right now. So we should make this like the hiccup episode where throughout the episode, like one of you guys just jumps out and tries to scare the shit out of me.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be exciting.
Do this periodically, you know? So keep your volume down low.
Right.
Yeah. You
know, Peter.
Maybe this won't happen.
I love you.
That scared the shit out of me.
Your hiccups are gone.
It's all a miracle.
So a new breed of mice has been created that is permanently cheerful. They have...
What? You just broke Aaron. Are you happy now?
Happy mice. Happy Joe.
Hello, everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
My name is Mickey.
Didn't Walt invent one of those like 60 years ago?
So I've been under the microscope for over 60 years.
So TREC1 is a gene that can affect transmission of serotonin in the brain.
It's called TREC1?
TREC1.
Mm. I thought TREC1 only caused misery.
By breeding mice with an absence of TREC1, researchers were able to create depression-resistant mice.
That's actually kind of cool.
So
how do you tell if the mice are depressed in the first place?
I don't know. I'm just picturing like a small horde of mice in cheerleader outfits with little pom-poms bouncing around.
I'm glad you asked that, Matt.
They're just hanging out by the wheel like, I don't really want to go on the wheel today.
They're smoking out in the parking lot. They have to like, where are our mice? So they're out in the fucking parking lot smoking all day.
These mice, also called knockout mice, don't ask me why, were then tested using separate behavioral, electrophysiological, and biochemical measures known to gauge depression in animals.
Mm.
The results really surprise us. Our knockout mice acted if they had been treated with antidepressants for at least 3 weeks.
So this is—they're not genetically changing the mice. They're giving them a serum or something.
No, they've genetically changed them.
Oh, they are.
I have to
genetically made depressed mice and then made them happy.
No, they genetically just made happy mice.
But I have to spell out the testing procedure. They take a whole bunch of really happy mice, and then they spent 3 weeks trying to make them miserable. Think about that. Like, what did they do?
Nope, still happy.
Videos of cats. Still happy.
Yeah, like they made them all watch Six Feet Under 24 hours a day.
Still happy. You know? I love you. I love you. Do you love me? I love you.
I wonder if you throw a
knockout
mice.
They make great pets, I bet.
You know? I love you. I love your cat. Your cat is just so nice.
Chomp.
That's okay. It'll grow back.
What do you want to do tonight, Rita?
That's crazy.
Obscure references for 200, please.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little freaky, though, if you think about genetically changing the human race so that they're always happy.
Narf.
I mean, that sounds messed up. Can you imagine? That'd be good sci-fi where, you know, they go into the future and everyone's all
happy,
like...
Everyone's happy,
Fnord? Yeah, everyone's happy, Fnord.
Yes.
All right. PlayStation 3, Don.
Yes.
PlayStation 3 is about 3 months away, and apparently the rumors are they have not manufactured one single device yet. In fact, they're
not making that release date.
Apparently, they don't even have the lines completely made, the machines and all that all put together yet. So unless Sony's done this. They've come out with machines before. Mm-hmm. Unless they've got something up their sleeve, it seems like there's not going to be a whole lot of PlayStations out there this year. They say they're on schedule. They said they're the ones that actually released this information. They said, no, that's fine. We're still on schedule. That's no problem for us.
All I ask is that they come up with games that play well. You know, the fact that people are playing like Uno... Mm-hmm. On the Xbox 360, I'd really like them to come up with not another first-person shooter that looks really great and plays like ass.
There isn't a ton of stuff I feel like rushing out to buy for the 360.
Exactly. Like, and, oh, great, there's another first-person shooter.
Cool stuff for the 360. I'm sure there will be, but I just went to the store, right? Mm-hmm. The only things that looked vaguely interesting were the new Dynasty Warriors and that... Yeah, I can play it online, but it looks the same as all the other ones.
That looks terrible, for one thing.
Is Prey out terrible. Yet?
Prey is out, but Prey is nice, but I don't really feel like rushing out to buy it either. Yeah.
Prey looks great. Battle for Middle-earth is great.
Portal looks good. you know?
They're coming out. Of course, Gears of War is coming out here soon.
Is Spore coming out for PlayStation or for
there
Xbox?
There are grumblings that there might be a Spore for more than just the PC, but that is not official at all.
Yeah, I don't know. The game looks like it's going to be huge to me.
Yeah.
Like, looks just physically
it
huge.
It looks ginormous.
So I don't know if they'll be able to fit it.
They're probably going to have to come up with a new NVIDIA card just to run it.
I don't know. There's a couple of great 360 games. It's the Star Trek Legacy coming out. That's going to be freaking awesome.
Come board, on, board,
oh, go put babes. On your uniform.
Come on! Anyway, that's all the news for me.
Donnie?
I have a minor little news story that is, it really isn't worth discussing, but it made me ask a question.
Okay.
It is a essay written by someone over at the National Review mm-hmm. that basically said, Firefly is a fascist series extolling fascist virtues.
That's interesting. How did they come up with that?
Well, let's see. In the 1930s, when ideological content was deliberate and ideological deviation was denounced, Serenity would be vilified as fascist for its opposition to social planning. The upshot, a capitalistic freebooter opposes the egalitarian democratic parliament. Its ubermenschy representative, a barely updated version of the H.G. Wellsian fascistic types parodied in Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, is beyond good and evil in his support of in his pursuit of a utopian world. Parliament's last major attempt at making a utopia, weeding out aggression through better chemistry, is resulted in death and horror on a grand scale, the lesson being that such enterprises are always doomed. Indeed, to the extent Mal Reynolds has an ideological agenda, it is merely to stand in the way of utopia and the desire of tyrants to impose happiness on everyone, whether they like it or not. Beyond that, he simply believes in people living their lives as they see fit, so long as their interests do not collide with his.
Huh. Well, okay. I have to agree with one thing, is I'm not sure if the show ran long enough for them to demonstrate that the government is oppressive.
Right.
I think we were supposed mm-hmm. to assume that.
Well, you get it from the movie.
You
kind of get it. You get that the government does bad things or has done bad things.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean the government's all bad. Just because there's a couple.
Yeah.
I think that you assume that there's an oppressive government out there and they're kind of.
Yeah, I got a sense that it was sort of like the way Mike Resnick portrays the government in Santiago, is that they're a central core of worlds, but you cannot control billions and billions of people without having bad governors, without having bad government at certain times. But generally, it gets things done. It gets things done by stepping on a lot of people when you have billions of people, but where people are free and they do real things are in the outer frontier.
But look at the
difficulty.
I actually
have to disagree. I think it's pretty clear that when you have a government that's going out to planets that are free planets and trying to force them to be part of your, of their government,
right?
That's not a free government.
That's not a free government.
No,
I agree.
No.
I mean,
in fact, that's a fascist government.
That's the opening episode.
Damn America!
Oh. Right.
You know. I don't know. I just think I didn't really think about it when I was watching the series or the movie, for that matter. But it does sort of raise the question, you know, what was the government they were fighting? What was the villain of the series? You know,
that's what I mean. Is, you know,
I thought it was more Civil War than anything else. I thought it was very North South.
No. It was them going out and annexing all of these smaller territories.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're like the rebels in the Star Wars universe, essentially, right. And. You know, again, I think we were to assume that. I mean, it wasn't the Federation. It's not the Star Trek Federation. That's what we were never led to believe that there. It's the happy, go lucky utopian place, and maybe that's just because that's what we put on it ourselves. Yeah. Because I don't remember an episode where you saw an oppressive government, really.
Well, I mean,
they just told you.
You saw aspects of it. You saw the fact that the sister had been kidnapped and forced, you know, to undergo experimentation.
Yeah, but again,
I mean, that is an oppressive government. You saw
that's true.
Well,
that's
and
true,
in the final movie, come on, it's a government that sponsors a gaseous mind control device.
No, you're right. In the final movie, I think it was a little more clear.
Yeah.
But I don't think in the television series you really got a firm understanding that it was a they never showed
that,
it to.
But there were
the blue men that are constantly chasing people. I mean, you know.
But there were two things that they did in the series. One, they showed the hospital episode where they actually do go to the capital planet.
Right, that's true.
And it's this beautiful, wonderful place with a rigid police structure. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, it's been a while since I've seen the episode, but I remember the police were there in a heartbeat.
Right, it was like a police state.
Waiting to happen, if not visibly on the surface, mm-hmm. right? And the other one just totally escaped me.
Oh, well. I just
anyway, we should.
I really should eat before we do these things.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And here I just thought it was a Western in space.
Again, I think it's just one of those series that didn't have enough episodes to explain the universe. It was obviously larger than we were able to delve into. You know, it got canceled before we got an episode where you saw how
kills me.
You know, crazy the government was. I mean,
well, we'll see. Maybe he'll do another movie. I know.
I just think it's really interesting to talk to people who finally did watch the series so long after it was canceled, and to find that most all of them hit the same point of anger, frustration, and rage that I did when I got to the end of the series, wondering how the hell did they let this be canceled? But
I wonder if the Sci-Fi Channel could ever get its hands on that.
No, that thing's locked down. It's never going to get made again. Yeah. I mean, everyone should just let it go. I mean, Jesus, there's so much more great ideas out there as sci-fi. Okay, this one didn't work. Let's just move on, people. Jesus.
Well, I think the problem is it did work, you know?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, I think the
It'd
more
be
important
easier to let go if it didn't.
Thing that you're missing is the reason we can't let it go is because if it was to go back on the air, we'd have more chances to see your hot sister.
Thanks.
Oh, wow. This I was trying to figure out a way in, Peter, and I couldn't, but I'm glad you did.
All right, Matt.
All right.
I think we're all trying to figure out a way in, but I'm married, so...
Wow. He's still in the room, man. All right.
Come on.
This is a lead-in to our segment, which is perhaps one of the most interesting and colorful phrases in the English language today is the phrase, snakes on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
It is one magical phrase which just by its sound can describe pain, pleasure, love, and Samuel L. Jackson. In language, snakes on a plane falls into many grammatical categories. It can be used as a verb, both transitive, John snaked Mary on a plane, and intransitive, Mary was snaked on a plane by John. It can be an action verb, John really snakes on a plane, a passive verb, Mary really doesn't snake on a plane, a bunch of things. But here are a few that I really liked. Surprise! What the snakes on a plane are you doing here? Fraud. I got snaked on a plane by the car dealer. Not feeling it, Don? All right.
No.
Resignation. Oh, snakes on a plane.
Okay, by that.
All right. Trouble. I guess I'm snakes on a plane now. Aggression. Go snake yourself on a plane. Pretty good? No. Okay. Disgust.
This sounds like a Washington Post article.
It's good.
Where where, like, the guy was trying to be, like, extra clever.
No, sorry. I'm not sure I can trust you in this one.
Yeah, I think you're getting deeper and deeper by yourself.
This is a long, slow descent.
All right.
This is a weird episode.
You know, I'm seeing this just getting snaked on a plane.
Yeah, exactly. See? Despair. Snakes on a plane again. Pleasure. I couldn't be happier if I had snakes on a plane. No. All right. Lost.
That actually almost works.
Displeasure. What the motherfuck is going on here? Snakes on a plane.
No, that's a person.
All right.
You might want to just...
almost as bad as just, the movie
tell me
itself.
Are we heading towards a punchline?
Denial.
On behalf of Geeks On, we'd like to apologize for this episode.
Denial. I didn't do it. The snakes did. On a plane.
What are you trying to do, Matt?
I'm sorry.
This is like...
You're trying to snakes on a plane this episode?
Yeah.
Jesus.
What the snakes on a plane were you, was I thinking?
Okay. Matt's wonderful segue leads us to what topic do we have this fine evening?
Well, let's see. Is it ducks on a Humvee?
No.
No? No. Is it swans in a Subaru?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Beavers on a boat.
No.
Beavers on a boat.
Well, that's scary.
I'd go see that one.
Wombats on a wagon?
Then there's only one thing it could possibly be. That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Platypi and a... No.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Geeks On Does Snakes on a Plane.
Woo-hoo!
No, wait, I said it wrong. Snakes on a motherfucking plane!
There we are.
Woo! And it's not actually this episode where, because I personally don't think there's a whole lot to talk about this movie, we're actually branching out and talking about bad movies.
Bad sci-fi.
Bad sci-fi, which means Snakes on a Plane doesn't even...
Though yes, we are not saying that Snakes on a plane is a bad movie per se. You know, first off, let's differentiate. You know,
so we're also branching into bad sci-fi and what makes it bad or what bad sci-fi is actually good.
Yes,
Mansquito. Done. Bad. That's the benchmark. Bad.
But none of us have seen it.
I saw most of it as much as I could stand.
Which is what, 15, 20 minutes?
35.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so Snakes on a Plane. So now
I've seen it. Peter's seen it.
And I saw it.
And you saw it.
Matt did not.
So, Matt, do you have any questions about Snakes on a Plane?
Yes.
Now, let me just put out there first. Conceivably, we may have spoilers on this episode.
Okay.
However,
I think it's in the title.
Here's the plot. There's snakes, and there's a plane, and the snakes are on it.
All right.
Yeah.
Done.
There's nothing else to spoil.
But there's what makes... we can spoil a little more. We can tell some of the great...
Yeah, I'm just saying it's not going to spoil the movie.
No,
you can tell the entire plot of this thing. In fact, I could read the book to you.
You can read the script to you. It won't ruin it for you.
I just told you the plot. There's a plane. There are snakes. The snakes are on it.
Right. But what makes it a sci-fi film is the fact that they have these things that make the snakes go... fucking batshit and try to...
First of all, it's not science. That's not...
That was my first question, was who got the damn role that I auditioned for?
I don't even remember him.
Who said, I let off the pheromone or whatever it was. What did it turn out to be?
Pheromone.
Okay, it turned out to be a pheromone?
Speaking as someone who is vaguely Asian, the Asian criminals in this were some of the most annoying stereotypes I've ever seen. But because it was this movie, I was okay with it.
Well, then they had Asian good guy to make sure that you knew that all Asians aren't bad.
Yeah, but the Asian good guy was as bland as any other Asian male hero I've ever seen.
Well, true, but he was just there to make sure that you know that there are good Asians out there. So you know that not all Asian people are bad guys.
Yep.
Good Asians.
Wait, good Asians.
That's different.
That's not good Asians.
Did you guys like the movie?
Yes, I genuinely
enjoyed the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed the movie as well. I thought that when I bought my ticket, I had expectations of what I wanted to see, and that was delivered.
They did a great job of hitting all the beats that you would expect.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, in fitting with our bad movie episode, did any of you think it was a good movie?
It's a great movie.
Good. It's a terrible movie,
and it was great.
Excellent. Okay, exactly.
It's terrible.
That's to differentiate from what we're getting into later with bad movies that are boring, badly put together, or some other major flaw
that makes it not
enjoyable.
It's not boring, but the dialogue is bad. The concept is bad. The special effects are bad.
But the bad dialogue is well delivered. The bad special effects are completely embraced.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's a bad movie. Like if you went, this could be
if it took itself seriously, it would be a debacle.
No,
I disagree. I think it took itself very seriously, which was what made it funny.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's some moments that probably broke out of that a little bit, but it wasn't done as cheeky as it could have been, which would have ruined it. But, and this is what I'm going to get to later, is if your expectation was something different, you will not like this movie.
What do you mean something different?
If your expectation is to get a really good, well-constructed movie.
Can I just stop you here?
There's no way that somebody's...
If your expectations are to have a really good, solid, well-crafted movie,
you're not going to go.
You're
see
on crack.
It. Yeah, you're not going to go.
Okay,
see
but,
it.
But,
you're retarded.
But
snakes.
But
you're crazy.
The reason why I say that is because this is going to be brought up in about 5 more minutes when we talk about other movies. The only reason why we had a fighting chance is because the title tipped us off, and we've known for the last 6 months not to have that expectation. But when I go see freaking Armageddon, I don't get that. They don't tell me. They don't say, dumbasses on a rock heading toward Earth. Yeah. I would have freaking loved that. I would have gone to that movie, and from the first moment they said a word, I would have loved it. It took me halfway through the movie for me. You know what I mean? Like expectations.
I am rechristening that movie.
Exactly. Dumbasses on a rock.
Heading towards her.
In parentheses, underneath it.
I had different expectations going to see that movie, and it took me an hour for me to say, you know what? I need to relax and just enjoy this movie. So anyway, it's an expectation thing.
I never got to that point with that one.
Oh, really? Okay, let's... So, anyway.
All right, so what was fun about this movie?
I'll tell you, there was one thing that was brilliant about the movie.
Okay.
Second. And that is the gay character. I think that was...
Who was the gay character?
The air steward.
The air steward, who they play throughout the entire movie as if he's gay. And he's saying to them, I'm not gay. And at the end, he's not gay. And it was great.
Yeah, it was a weak joke.
I thought it was
great. I thought the... Actually, you know what was hysterical that I didn't think that... I don't think they meant for it to be funny is the Red Bull at the beginning. Did you guys laugh at that at all? The audience was going crazy over that.
What are you talking about?
The
they
product
had this
placement?
Really horrible product placement where the guy, the hero, one of the heroes gets off his motorbike at the beginning and then grabs a Red Bull perfectly positioned and drinks it like in a commercial. We all started laughing our ass off. Then he goes to his apartment, sits down on the couch, and right next to his TV is a stack cases of Red Bull. We all started laughing our ass off on that. And then he gets interrogated by Samuel L. Jackson, and he says, we know where you were because we have evidence. And he throws an evidence bag on the table, and in there is a can of Red Bull. I thought I was gonna pee my pants.
I just completely missed it.
Oh,
I think
God.
Bond did too.
I laughed in the evidence scene, but that was about it.
Okay. If they would have continued with that, that would at least once or twice more later on in the movie, everybody would
have
gotten that joke.
It may have been subtly hidden there.
Everybody would have gotten the joke if it was placed at least one more time.
Damn,
if
those
not twice.
Red Bull hidden jokes.
Anyway, I thought that was funny.
The joke? I don't get the joke with you explaining it to me. What's the joke?
Well, I mean, the bit of here's a movie that's so bad that we're making a joke out of the product placement. I mean, it was so in your face.
So
it was laughable.
You think they were making a joke out of it?
I don't know if they were. I'm just saying it was funny.
I think the director was.
I think it was funny as hell.
Yeah. I know. From what you're telling me, it sounds like it was. But
anyway.
All right. Next question. With any B film, were there boobs?
Well, here's the thing. There were two key boob elements.
Okay.
Right? And they were really clearly kind of inserted because they're on a plane. You know, there's really only so many opportunities for boobage, right?
Okay, right.
So they were inserted. They were all filmed after.
Yep.
Yeah.
They decided, okay, we're going to go for the R thing. So we need a nude scene where these two people join the, the Mile High Club.
All right. Yeah, I figured. Yeah.
And I actually found that scene actually pretty hot. I was really kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, it was hot. But it was also a groaner.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like oh, I mean, audience screamed during that part. I don't want to ruin it, but audience screamed during that part. There was
it made me laugh. It was funny. It was sexy. It was a good scene. But as soon as the lights go up in the end, the opening credits begin, you see nothing but bikini babes bouncing along a beach, right? Has nothing to do with the rest of the movie whatsoever.
Oh, I missed that.
In fact, Don leaned over to me and said, yeah, I think that they're trying to get this out of the way right now.
Yeah. And I was right. So there's a tremendous amount of boobage in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
All right.
So if that's one of your goals for seeing this movie, be sure to watch from the beginning.
Okay.
Because once you get past the first 10 minutes of the movie, no more boob.
No more boob.
We are boob free from that point on.
Right.
Wow.
But again, it was fun. Go see it if you want to spend the time on that.
They did one thing that I thought was – that actually surprised me. I was actually expecting lots more young, pretty people, right? But I think one of the big heroic moments in the movie is when this older airline stewardess gets to be the hero. Mm-hmm. She hears a baby crying back in the snake-infested area, and she goes back and she saves the baby.
Right.
And she's not like some young, beautiful woman with a torn shirt and cleavage hanging out all over the place. It's your mom running him back to save a baby.
Right. Yeah, it was good.
I thought that was cool.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about some other let's talk about bad movies and what makes them good and what makes them bad, a la Armageddon or Mansquito.
Mansquito is my top. You hated Raptor, right, Pete?
Gee, I saw moments of Raptor, and Raptor was, I gotta tell you, part of what can make something bad are the special effects.
Oh my God.
And when the special effects look Scooby-Doo style, and they're not intended to, when literally you've got a woman laying on the ground, and the raptor is supposed to be stomping on her. It flies down out of the air and lands, and it's supposed to be stomping on her with the claws, but the claws look like, kind of like something out of South Park, where it's cut out and it's put on top, and,
Yeah, and they've missed the angles. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I saw that at your
shading.
House.
Yeah. They missed the shading. I mean, it's like every it's completely different shade than everything else. It doesn't look like it's lit. It's bad. It's bad.
Do you still have the hiccups?
Oh, I still have the hiccups.
Okay.
Again, I'm going to bring this down to expectations. There are some movies that...
come on, Aaron. Mansquito.
No.
I have no expectations
for
Mansquito.
No,
but I'm going to follow up Aaron.
But there's some movies that you love and that are really bad. And, absolutely. And I'm telling you, that's because of expectations. That's the reason why you can say Star Wars Episode 1 is one of the shittiest movies of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
Not because it's the same quality as Mansquito. It's because you expect it to be better.
That's damn straight.
And that's why Mansquito is probably better than Episode Mother Effin' 1. Because
I'll argue with that.
Well, hang on.
But only by a little bit.
Okay, were you more disappointed coming out of Mansquito or more disappointed coming out of Episode 1?
Well, I couldn't watch Mansquito all the way through.
Because you were so disappointed?
Because it was just horrible. It's to me, I get sort of nervous for the filmmaker after a certain point with really bad films where mm-hmm. I can't watch this guy humiliate himself anymore.
And
I have to change the channel. It's like, you know, it's like watching stupid people and The Price is Right. I can't watch them make idiots of themselves. I have to change the channel. Hmm. So,
well,
can't watch it the whole
way. To me, it really has. I mean, I like watching Zardoz. I will tell you right here now that
Why do you like that film so bad?
That it's a bad movie.
It's so bad.
It is bad. I'm saying it right now. It's a bad movie.
So, I think we have to establish number one, bad movies are subjective.
Well, obviously, it's art. All art is subjective.
But maybe it's more subjective than like some high art pieces, you know?
Maybe.
Movies all have their audience, whereas a good movie has a broader audience.
Well, Don, you tend to like really, really bad
films. Yeah, Don, you're on a different level, though, on the bad movies.
This is true.
You like the Gigglefest bad movies that are like your own private MST3K.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like you'll watch stuff that I just can't sit through.
Like you
and I'm baffled that you can't find the joy in these things.
Like you hated Underworld 1, which I think is expectation.
I think that's an expectation thing.
And then
too.
Underworld 2 you liked.
No, I didn't.
I thought you liked Underworld 2.
No.
Because
Underworld
2
is
crap.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that at all.
Okay, good.
No, remember his description?
What?
Enemy number one kills enemy number two. Enemy
two.
Oh,
right.
But, you know, again, brilliant. Expectation ruined that movie more than the quality of that movie.
Okay, but now, to play into the expectation thing, let me share you a movie experience I had in college.
Okay.
I went to the video store with a friend, and we went out actively looking for a bad movie to watch that day.
Okay.
I'm sure that's something all of you have done.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, we found a movie. It was a Dutch import filmed in English, called The Lift, right? The picture on the front of this of the box had an elevator door half open, right?
Okay.
And a guy crawling with an expression of fear and terror out of the elevator door while you can't see what's on the other side of the door because it's this blinding light, right? And the caption on the box said, "The lift. Take the stairs. Take the stairs. For God's sakes, take the stairs."
Clever.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, you're on board with me, right?
Okay.
You got to rent it. This is one you got to bring home and show to mom.
We're all on the same
list. This sounds like Chopping Mall already.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but then here's what they did. They took a big campy subject matter of a killer elevator, right? That's campy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
Benny Hill. I think he actually did do an episode about a killer elevator.
And then they came up with this elaborate plot. You know, it's a Defense Department AI chip that they accidentally put in the elevator by accident. And they took themselves very seriously, and they had to explain everything, and they killed their own movie by making it very serious, very slow, and dramatic, rather than just, you know, okay, we got a killer elevator. How many ways can we kill people with an elevator?
Right.
You know? You have to match the tone.
Well, again, it's an expectation thing. Yep. Your expectation was set up incorrectly, and then you saw the film, and you didn't get what you wanted.
Exactly.
And then that aspect, it kind of worked in the opposite way. You wanted cheese and you got dark and gritty. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it was just boring.
It was just boring.
I got to disagree on some levels that it's not just expectations. I mean, I think that there are some movies out there like you have
Let me just inject one thing before you put us on a more illuminated path.
Okay.
But by this statement
we're
making...
We'll see if it's actually illuminated.
By this statement
we might be blind
making,
by the time we're done here.
Well, we have one flaw in this thinking. Mm-hmm. The way we're setting it up, it's like marketing manufactures bad movies. Like, if we had just been set up our expectations correctly, we could enjoy anything. Which is not the case.
No, that's clearly not the case. But you know? I'm saying that the reason why we can like bad movies... Mm-hmm. is because we are expecting that and we're okay with it.
I don't think that that's always the case. Sometimes you walk into something and you just rapidly realize it's an awful movie and you go, you know what, I'm going to go on for the ride because actually it's not even just that something's bad. It's got to be in how stylishly bad it is.
Well, for example, I like Armageddon. I thought...
Yeah, but
well,
how many here...
You like world destruction movies.
I do like world destruction movies. Yeah, but you I like disaster movies. I mean, even Godzilla. I went to see Godzilla to watch a big lizard tear down New York.
Right.
I paid my money, right, and a big lizard tore down New York. That is a shit movie.
Oh, it's a piece of crap.
That is a piece of crap movie, but I got what I paid for.
Yeah, but how many people here would say that Godzilla or Armageddon is a good, bad sci-fi film? Put it into the good quality out of the bad films.
No.
I wouldn't, not even top tier.
I was bored.
So you would, but we wouldn't.
I was bored.
Okay, well, again, they're bad movies. I can't...
But on
the
flip side, like, I hate Armageddon. I like Deep Impact. And you hated that, right?
No, I think Deep Impact was good. Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
That's fine.
I like things like Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
Volcano. Like, any time where Anne H. is dipping her fingers in water and going... This water is 3 degrees hotter.
and so are you.
And it's like, what? And he's, you know what it would take? It would take a geological event to make this water 3 degrees hotter. And I love dialogue like that.
Or the guy,
like,
grabbing the child and wading through lava to throw the child to
well,
his mother.
If you like that dialogue, how come you don't like the gun is good, the penis is evil? Which is from Zardoz. I mean, that's like a classic line.
It's... God, it's about delivery. And take this from somebody who has delivered lines
that are bad
in a bad sci-fi movie.
Okay, I have to say that I could not watch all of Species 3.
I'm so happy that you died.
Yeah.
I'm so happy you died in the first 5 minutes.
I tried really hard.
It's a really bad film, and I'm so sorry for making you guys watch me be bad.
For those
in that
of you coming
film.
To Geeks On Late, Matt is a featured performer. In Species 3.
Yes, I am the first guy to die to let you know that the situation is grave.
And in fact, the special effects guys were so awful at what they're doing that he almost did die.
Well, no, I almost lost my package, but that was about it.
But again,
George Takei would have been most upset.
Yes, he would.
Again, I'm not going to defend
George Takei.
Yeah.
I'm not
George Takei would have been most upset.
Yeah. George. Oh, you mean Takei or
Takei?
Yeah. Well,
Takei. George Takei.
Well, according to the roast I watched, when he corrected everybody, it's Takei.
Really?
Yeah, he corrected.
Yeah,
he
said Takei.
Anyway, I'm not going to defend these.
Watch the Shatner roast. Come join us on the upper level, Peter.
It's going to be a long hike up those stairs to get there. I ain't taking the lift.
Okay, again, I'm not going to defend a bad movie, and I'm never going to convince somebody to like a bad movie. It's just not going to happen. And
Zardoz ain't happening.
And I don't expect you to ever watch that with me and go, you know what, Aaron? God, I'm glad I sat down with
Sean
you.
Sean Connery is great.
But again, like, and you watch movies, I'm like, Jesus, Don, I really don't get it. And it's just because in your brain, you're getting what you want out of that film at that time.
No, I think for me, it's very easy for me to laugh at things in a
right,
very
which is what you
heartless,
wanna,
malicious sort of
which
way.
Which is what you want out of that film, right?
No, I suppose that's true.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting what you need out of that film.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about things like the Puppet Master movies or Chud or any of the Hellraisers, Hellraiser 3,
Oh, the first
4.
Hellraiser has some moments
oh,
that
yeah.
are real
oh,
that
first
make
Hellraiser
it
is great.
Good, even though it's kind of a bad movie. There's enough nuggets of goodness in there to kind of...
I've actually met very few people who call the first Hellraiser a bad movie. I reserve judgment. I don't really have an opinion
if you,
on it.
Yeah, okay, I'm not going to call it a bad movie at all, okay. But there's some bad stuff in there. I mean, the acting is really bad, and there's some really bad stuff in there, but I think there's some basic comments, or basic ideas in there that's scary as hell. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they just threw all that away on the think of the sequels. But, but like, yeah, well, I mean, Chud or like Chud what I like was, to call...
I love Chud.
What I like to call the descent, the beginning years.
If you saw Chud, I remember Chud in the same breath that I remember a movie called The Stuff. Have any of you seen that?
The white, the white.
It's diet frozen yogurt ice cream that becomes sentient and carnivorous.
It's like a, the blob. It's like the
blob
80s version
with frozen ice cream.
Yeah, it's the 80s version of the blob.
What's the name of the movie? Is it Mr. Frosty? It's a snowman.
Yes.
Is it? It's a snowman.
No, it's called
that becomes that
evil.
Becomes a serial killer. And
it gets the spirit of a serial killer.
That movie, I was so close to turning it off. I hated it. And then somehow he got into the shower with this woman and reforms as a snowman, and then like kills her by taking off his carrot nose and stabbing her like 19 times. And then I fell in love.
For me, the quintessential moment is Sleepwalkers. Just you reminded me of this. Is when the evil mother werecat breaks into a guy's house, picks up a cob of corn and stabs him through the heart and says, "I told you, don't eat your vegetables and no dessert."
I don't know. What are some of the... do you like any bad movies, Peter?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
Like, why would you like a bad movie?
I
mean,
well, I think the first thing is that there's sort of three different sort of categories of bad movie for me. Okay.
Three?
Yeah. The first category of bad movie are bad movies that you can enjoy because of the surroundings you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, so 3 a.m. in college after a bender? That's a great bad movie.
You're hanging out with a bunch of people. It's an awful movie. You have a Mystery Science Theater... You know,
esque
experience.
Yeah.
One of the best bad movies I ever saw was it's a Stephen King movie, Pet Sematary 2.
Ugh.
And I saw it in South Central Los Angeles with the best audience ever. And oh my God, it was the funniest movie I'd ever seen because of the things people were shouting out. You know, it was hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, look, under any other circumstance, I'm sure that would be the most painful, awful movie I'd ever seen. Okay, so...
It is.
You've got that.
It's really, really a really bad film.
So the second thing is that, you know, you've got bad science fiction, bad sci-fi movies. Well, you can have bad science or you can have bad fiction.
Okay, yeah.
So, for example, Tron is a bad science fiction film. The science in that is a complete bullshit.
Yeah.
It is bullshit. There's no fucking way that someone gets zapped into a computer and the computer sent and all this crap's going on. There's hot women and like little light outfits.
It can happen.
It does.
It could happen.
Okay.
It just hasn't happened yet.
It happened last night.
But
it doesn't happen normally.
It could happen.
It doesn't happen, okay?
We're working on the
program. Bad science.
Wait until Tron 2.0.
And yet the fiction of that was great.
Yeah, it's fun.
It was really well written.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, you have that's not a bad movie. People don't say Tron was a bad movie.
No.
I mean, you're saying, okay,
well,
it's got
some
bad elements, but Godfather's got some bad elements,
I'm not saying it's
too.
A bad movie, but I am saying it's bad science fiction.
Yeah.
We're talking about bad movies.
Yeah.
We're talking about people that
are
going to be embarrassed
sci-fi.
To say you like.
But
we're talking about everything.
Okay.
Okay. But you can also have something that's just, you know, it's really good science. It's really interesting. It's got something to it. Or even just, maybe what I'll say is it might even just have a good idea to it that's so intriguing you got to watch it.
Millennium.
And it's really badly done.
Yeah.
The movie Millennium or the series?
The movie Millennium.
Millennium. Series is great too. Yeah.
Great idea, crap ass movie.
Great science.
Or
great
Stargate.
Stuff. Stargate
was a great premise, really poorly executed.
Yeah.
You know?
It was
actually
a great premise.
It was a really neat
that's
premise.
That's a good premise.
It's a really neat premise.
Opening up a door to another world and
no, that
a bath.
There these doors have been there.
Yeah.
And they've been here and
for
they've
eons.
Helped shape our society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The reason why we have the Egyptian pyramids or the Mayan period is they're actually alien society.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Dune.
Okay.
Dune has got some of the coolest shit in it. Just great stuff. And yet, if you really watch it again, it's really poorly, clumsily written in so many different
ways.
Which
is strange, because when they redid it, they didn't particularly make it any better. I would have sort of hybrided the casts between the two, and then, I don't know.
I think they just sort of lifted the second one from the book.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's, I guess, that's part of the reason why I like Zardoz. There's some things in Zardoz I find really interesting. And, you know, it's hard to watch. But
well,
if you grasp onto those things.
Is in a certain way, especially when you're watching science fiction, even bad science fiction, you're waiting for a concept. Mm-hmm. You know, like The Postman, which I hate because of my expectation because the book was so damn good.
Right. Yep.
You know?
I had the same thing. I was so disappointed.
Is that you're getting across a concept. But you liked The Postman because you got the concept.
Right. And again, I will tell you right off the bat, that's a bad movie. There's some things in there that are just
same thing with Waterworld.
But again, there's some. God. I thought The Postman. If I tell somebody about the movie Postman, they all go, "Wow, that's a cool idea."
It is a cool idea. It's a great book, but it's just such a horrific follow through. That's why movies like Mankiewicz piss me off, is because even the concept is so flawed, it's just, let's throw a bunch of crap in here.
Yeah.
And then they don't even follow through on the sort of snakes in a plane aspect of it, of going, okay, all we want is to see the Mankiewicz.
Right. We want to see people's eyes getting – we want people to yell out and laugh.
Mankiewicz!
Yeah.
Well, done.
It's interesting because both Raptor and Mankiewicz are clear ripoffs of other movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Mankiewicz was The Fly.
And I don't mind
the
Raptor bad B
was
film.
Jurassic Park. And what they've done is they've ripped off the scientific, you know, concept, I guess, without taking anything that made the other movies deep and interesting and unique.
There's a movie called Time Bomb with Michael Biehn of Terminator fame.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a horrifically bad film, but I love it because of the concept that it brings across. Because it's, you know, this guy who finds his history, he's a clockmaker, and suddenly he finds out that he's a super spy.
Mm.
And it's a cool-ass film. It's such a fun film to watch. Of course, I saw it at 3 a.m. after going on a bender, so, you know, that might have made it better.
There's an action movie coming out that stars the guy from the Transporter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this sounds like a really...
Crank.
Okay, this has got to be one of the worst ideas ever. But if you go to this movie,
Looks fun, though.
It looks like it's going to be fun. So I think the concept is this guy gets drugged or he gets poisoned somehow, and the poison will kick in when he's all hyped up when he gets it. The poison will kick in when his adrenaline level subsides and it will start killing him. So he's going to go find his killers, but the only way he's going to have time to do that is if every second from that point on his adrenaline level is up. So he has to drive fast, and he has to have sex with all these women, and he's got to jump off the building, and he's got to fight everybody, and he can't stop, otherwise he's going to die. I mean, who thought of that dumb fucking idea? It's so stupid, I can't even think
but
straight.
But I love the way you pitched it. I wish I could have recorded that. Oh my God, you guys have missed out. If you could have seen the performance that just happened.
It's like Speed 3.
Yeah. Except then it's personal.
Except that instead of speed.
This time it's personal.
Instead of speed, it's crank.
This Speed 3, this time it's personal. Yeah. Personal speed.
I might actually go see this movie because it's that bad, and when I put my money down, I'm not going to expect dialogue that's worth listening to. I'm not going to expect a storyline worth listening to.
I love the guy from The Transporter.
I love The Transporter. I thought I was going to hate The Transporter, and I love that.
Yeah, I still haven't seen the second one. I'm looking forward to it.
Well,
so
is that where like a bunch of people get bit by snakes while they're having sex, or is that some other movie?
No, that's Snakes,
that's snakes
on a Plane.
No.
I saw some weird movie.
Snakes on a Plane are you thinking?
I think the guy from The Transporter was in it, and for some reason these people wanted to have sex. And it had Lucy Liu having sex with some guy in a snake pit with all these rattlesnakes biting them while they're having sex.
Was a dream.
What
of
do
yours?
You eat before bed? No, this was. I was like,
yeah.
I have very vivid recollections of this because I'm going, what the F is this?
Okay.
Who thought of that?
I don't know.
All right, we should wrap this up.
As we wind this down, worst sci-fi movie in your opinion?
Worst sci-fi movie.
Again, I'm going to pick one that disappointed me the most. Not a bad, not, like, you know, Mankiewicz doesn't fall into that category. You know, Episode 1, Episode 2, these things let me down. I mean,
that's the worst sci-fi. That's the worst.
No, this is worst sci-fi experience. Worst sci-fi experience for him. That's fair.
Episode 2.
What is yours?
I don't know. I mean, I have not watched the entire film of anything that I thought was that bad. I mean. Raptor.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. So you can turn it off.
Oh, I will absolutely turn
See,
it off.
Once I watch a movie, I'm committed.
Yeah, I'll
I
watch a movie. Shit.
I thought Raptor was awful. I thought Mansquito looked really bad.
Mansquito was horrific.
You know, I can't even think of what's probably a really bad.
Message to Sci-Fi Channel. Get off your fucking ass and make a good movie, please.
Well, and they have Battlestar. It's not like they don't know that good sci-fi
They
can't
actually
work.
Have occasionally put out ones. Like, I
what,
there was this
Dungeons
one?
And Dragons, the movie?
No, there was this Species one starring 3? Alice Krieg, where, like, I barely remember it now. She, anyway, that's not important.
Let's
it
write it.
Tangent.
All righty.
Bad sci-fi movie, Matt.
Well, I'll have to be with Aaron. You know, my in terms of biggest disappointment, it's the episodes. In terms of
the
my
episodes.
The episodes, I can't even talk about them. In terms of just film, I'll have to say Mansquito was just about as bad as it ever has been.
And for me,
one of my worst ones, by the way, I'll be talking about here soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are other ones that were worse, but I've seen them on MST3K since then, and
they go
they've become good now.
Yeah, that's true. Which just goes to prove even a bad movie in the right environment can be a lot of fun.
True.
For me, the worst sci-fi movie experience I've ever had was Supernova, which was just the most relentlessly boring, set up every cliche you can think of and follow it through movie you've ever seen.
I've seen that on the shelf, but I've never, like...
It stars
like
James Spader and Angela Bassett, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh,
and
good cast.
It had a very good cast, and all of them were just walking through the movie.
What's Sphere about? Had a good cast.
I vaguely remember that like they go to Mars or something and they find some sort of demon crystal that
sounds like Doom.
It amplifies the dark side of their personality and gives them powers. It was really dumb.
Lame. All right, can we call it can we call this one
Snakes on a Plane Believable?
Shall we do our geek
still
bit?
Trying, huh?
I'm still trying.
Okay.
All right, let's get to our geek bit then.
All right. How about how the snakes on a plane are you?
Okay, so our bit this week, I think we're going to call it Have You Seen It? Okay? Each of us has brought in one or two movie descriptions. We are going to share that movie description and title with the other geeks, and the other geeks will try and figure out if it's a real movie or something we've made up. All right.
You guys probably know some of these. It's hard to do. I wrote these as if I was pitching these to a movie studio, as movies that haven't been made yet. So
okay.
Anyway,
hit us.
Should I read all three or just do one?
Just do one.
All right. Okay. What's more terrifying than a werewolf? How about a werewolf with cybernetic metal skin? That's right. In 1974, an American secret agent takes a blood sample from a werewolf in Budapest, then returns to the U.S., where for some reason he decides to juice himself and inject himself with the blood. Unable to control himself, he brutally kills a few people, but is captured by Hard Nails' Colonel Miller. Instead of killing the beast, for some reason, he cryogenically freezes him for I can't figure out reason why. Decades later, the U.S. Secret Operations Center, a group of doctors experimenting with a synthetic metal skin, seems seemingly stalled in their studies because they can't find a good subject to experiment on. They are then given a frozen cadaver of this beast as a test subject, resulting in a red-eyed creature that looks like a cross between Predator, Sonic the Hedgehog, and the alien from the movies. For safety, they keep him strapped to a bed with a new polymer strangely similar to Saran Wrap. Despite this, it tears through it, escapes, starts killing again, but a few resourceful doctors melt some silver real quickly just in time to use a high-powered bazooka conveniently found on the premises and blow them into a zillion bloody pieces.
What's it called?
I call this movie Project Metal Beast. Now, you can either wait for my other two and decide which ones you think are real and which ones aren't, or you can try to guess.
I think that one's real.
Yeah, that's real.
You think that one's real?
Yeah.
Too detailed.
Okay.
Fake.
Do you think it's fake?
All right.
I think I've also heard the title Metal Beast before, so.
Operation Metal Beast, or Project Metal Beast, I mean, is real. Real movie.
Ah,
real
ha-ha.
Crap movie.
I defeat you.
I've watched this
movie. I stomp
movie.
On your head.
It is terrible. All righty. Next.
All right. A shower of meteorites blinds 99% of the people on the Earth. At the same time, this chaos results in the escape of experimental triffids that are able to move around and attack people. It's called Day of the Triffids.
Well, you just described one of the most classic science fiction movies
of
all time.
Yeah, it's a famous movie, man. I watched that when I was a kid. Yeah. I loved it.
I've never even heard of it. I just think it's awful.
Day of the Triffids are great.
Yeah,
it's a great film.
It's really, they're giant tree beasts. It's really great.
They're like big stalks with sunflowers on top.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Matt, do you have one?
Yep. All right. This movie takes place in ye olde London, England.
Okay.
All right. Man visits a small village where he finds that people are dying daily.
Mm-hmm.
He, who used to be an investigator 20 years ago, is called upon to find out what's going on. He finds out, slowly, that people are hearing voices. And then, daily, the voices become louder and louder and louder till they feel this urge to run off into the woods, and then they're never seen or heard from again. Once he pursues them into the woods, he finds out that they're being led there by a small parasite which has been coming up through the water and has been burrowing up into their brains using a small husk-like thing and has been leading them off into a small pit where it's feeding on them and turning into a giant sort of octopus-like beast. This movie is called The Parasite.
The Parasite. I think that is fake.
I think that's fake.
I'll go for real.
It sounds like a Matt creation.
Fake!
All right, Don.
All right. Now, I know some of you may have heard of the legendary movie Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-Rama.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Now, there was a little-known sequel to this movie, Sorority Babes in the Dance-a-Thon of Death, in which the sorority babes from a sister fraternity of the legendary Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-Rama go to a dance-a-thon where they accidentally summon ancient demons from hell that run amok, and much nudity ensues.
Much nudity?
Much nudity.
God, I hope that's real. I'm going to say that's fake.
I would have absolutely said it's fake, yeah.
Matt?
Fake. I would have said it's fake, but I looked it up and it's real.
Cheater.
Cheated.
That is in fact true. Both Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-Rama and Sorority Babes in the Dance-a-Thon of Death are both real movies made by the same director. And Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-Rama is now available on DVD.
Hmm. All right, Peter, you can't cheat. Stop doing that shit.
What?
No, close it.
Stop what? It. Close that. Close
I'm actually
your computer.
Just looking up with that movie you just talked about.
Okay. What's the most terrifying and most threatening force known right now? That's right, Martians. And what's the one man, the one perfect hero that we can all look up to? Santa Claus. The story centers around the leaders of the planet Mars, including Momar, the mom Martian, Kimar, King Martian, who are worried about their children, Girmar and Bomar, their son and daughter. The children seem to be watching too much Earth television, most notably station KIDS, which interviews Santa Claus in his workshop in the North Pole. Consulting their ancient Martian sage, Cochum, he advises that the children of Mars are growing distracted due to the society's overly rigid structure. Cochum sadly notes that he's seen this coming for centuries, and states the only way to help the children is to allow them to have freedom and to be allowed to have fun. To do this, they need a Santa Claus figure of their own. So the Martians decide to invade Earth and kidnap Santa Claus. The kidnapping is successful, stealing Santa and two other children who get caught up in the scheme. Back to Mars, Voldar, the a warmongering Martian, however, is in constant disagreement with this idea and repeatedly tries to kill Santa Claus, as he believes that the Santa is corrupting the children of Mars and turning them away from the race's original glory. But when Santa arrives on Mars, he overcomes the Martians by bringing fun, happiness, and Christmas cheer to the Martian children.
Okay. I would have said that this isn't true, but I was watching Don's face and he was nodding, so I think it's got to be true.
Oh, come on, Don!
It's one of my favorite episodes of MST3K.
It's been given away. It's true.
Oh,
it's a famous...
Don,
it's a
you
famous,
sit outside when I...
He's sitting here with his big smile on his face just going... Mm-hmm.
It's a famous flick, man.
I knew that he hadn't heard of
what
it.
What was it called again?
It's called Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
That is so
That's
funny.
Awesome.
I'm just stunned.
That's awesome.
All right. Anybody else have one? I have one more.
Go for it.
I got one more, too.
All right. Oh, I did that one already. Okay. Here's a combo that hasn't been seen much screen time. Cowboys versus dinosaurs. After a failed bank robbery and being chased out of town by Sheriff Dylan Williams, two disgruntled quick-draw thieves, Frank Carlson and Hoss Peters, stumble upon a sacred Indian burial ground and secret ritual being performed. An energy portal opens up before them, and for some reason, images of the past start streaking before them. With Sheriff Dylan Williams hot on their heels, the two thieves dash into the time portal, disappearing with no trace. Realizing what just happened, the old Indian chief convinces Sheriff Dylan Williams to go in after them and save them from a distorted timeline. Collecting a posse of five brave, upstanding men and one Indian scout, Swiftpaw, Sheriff Williams and his men enter the time portal into the Jurassic Age. Fighting brontosauruses, allosauruses, triceratops, and tribes of cavemen, later found to be descendants of Swiftpaw, they track the thieves, subdue them, and save the timeline. But as Sheriff Dylan and men return to the future, we see a lone caveman digging through the dust and discovering a six-shooter. Could there be a sequel? Come on, Smiley! Have you heard of that one?
That's a fake. That's an Aaron Hendricks original.
It's probably fake, but I'm going to say it's real.
Fake.
It is fake. The movie was called The Wild Wild Wind.
Oh, Aaron.
Oh, like that's worse than Santa Claus Conquers Martians?
Matt, go for it. All right. One day, the human race wakes up, and there are alien ships everywhere. All right. Now, this movie follows a family, actually. And it's the Thurber family, and it starts with the daughter who first becomes in contact with the aliens, mm-hmm. and it watches her in a series, the first third of the film, watches her grow up and contact with these aliens. Now, the aliens will never, ever show themselves, though they will share their technology. In the final scene of the first third, the girl sees the aliens and then screams and then goes into a catatonic state.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Second third is her granddaughter taking care of her as she watches as the aliens, who are now a part of Earth life.
Mm-hmm. So years later,
serious part of Earth life. And they're helping us along and they're giving us cars and they're saying we have a destiny and mm-hmm. they're helping us towards that destiny years and years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes through the second family, and it helps this girl along, and she actually becomes the liaison with the aliens and helps them make Earth into a great place. Third mm-hmm. third is her son, as he, you know, and this is a few hundred, this is almost, because they expand the living lifetime of humans, mm-hmm. a few hundred years down the line, and he basically helps the aliens truly come to power, and they're finally going to reveal themselves as who they are to the planet Earth. And they do, and they say, it's finally time. You've had us around for almost 200 years. It's enough. You can tolerate seeing us now. And the ship opens up, and they come down, and they look like Lucifer, the devil. Mm. And basically, they've been coming to Earth for years and helping us along and moving us along. And they finally do. And then they basically say, the Earth is going to explode. We didn't want to tell you. But we have to basically take the rest of you on a ship, whatever you think are the seed for the next human species,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to take you to the next planet, and you're going to try and terraform it. And he ends up being...
I'm going to say that's fake because I don't... It's too sci-fi-y.
I'm going to say that that's not a movie.
Okay. Yeah. It's real, but it's not a movie. That's too long.
Excellent. Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's Childhood End by Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too sci-fi-y to be a movie. It's just no one, everyone... I mean, it sounds like an awesome story. That's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
That's just a one that can't be made.
Yep.
All right, I've got two I'm going to whip through real quick.
Okay.
Okay, one, aliens have been coming to Earth for generations and harvesting human DNA through their rectal probing. They have built human bioengineered battle creatures from this stuff, which they send to attack Earth,
mm-hmm.
using our own DNA against us.
Okay.
The movie title is Prostate Yourself Before Us.
False.
False. Fake.
I'm going to say that's fake.
Oh, damn. I figured if I went really crazy, maybe it might be a bite.
Yeah, the title. Yeah. It
no
sounds
one
like
would ever do that title. The title's what got you.
But the video game, Destroy All Humans, is kind of like that.
Yeah, I know.
You use the anal probe just to try to get
a,
the...
That's a comedy.
Yeah. Last but not least, try this one on for size. Lynn is a disturbed young woman who escapes the mental hospital and while on the run comes across a small farm where she befriends the kindly farmer and his mysteriously overgrown, angry herd of pigs. One night she catches him killing a drifter and feeding the body to the demanding pigs who devour him instantly. At which point she finds out that several years ago, the pigs got loose one night and devoured a drunk who had fallen asleep in the field mm-hmm. and have developed a taste for human flesh. Since that time, he's been feeding them in a desperate attempt to try and keep them contained and sedate and happy, because when they go without too long, they break loose and run amok. So eventually, someone from the mental hospital comes up, and in the big fight to keep her, both the lead guy and the mental hospital worker are killed. She feeds both the bodies to the pigs and leaves a note saying, "Couldn't take it anymore, threw myself to the pigs," which the local sheriff finds and declares the whole matter closed. The title of this movie is Pigs.
I'm going to say that's true.
Yeah, it's probably true.
False.
True.
Dang.
Yay!
That is correct.
I think I saw that movie, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah, a long, long time ago.
I saw that one. I was like, no one would ever believe this. Like...
Alrighty.
James Purifoy, Patrick Swayze, and Michael Clark Duncan star in a sci-fi original about a young farmer who comes back from the Crusades and decides to go and kill a dragon. That's it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, true.
It is actually true. Can you believe that those people are in a crappy sci-fi original?
All righty. We done with this bit?
We're done with
this.
All right,
show you cool. what Patrick Swayze looks like in this thing.
So one thing before we close up the show is we want to draw a name from this, our bag of holding here, because
I'm the most buxom and shapely. I get to draw the name.
Okay, this is our plus four bag of holding.
We're having a drawing that we started at the George R. R. Martin show. I had a lot of people come to the forums. There's a lot of people posted, a lot of new people. I'm not sure if it was because of this or it's just because they wanted to comment on the show, but there's some great topics.
We have your board game here.
Yeah. That's the board game shaking right there. We have all the names that were that did post, and we are going to draw one name from this big pile.
That's it.
And then we will contact you through the forums. So, Don, Matt, who's going to draw?
Don's going to draw.
Draw, partner.
Are there runner-up? Are there runner-up?
No.
No.
Autographed picture of Matt?
Yeah, great. No, that'll be worth 30 cents.
But if anybody out there is listening and you know, they want a contest about sending us a game that we can give away for future episodes, or mm-hmm. a DVD, or any type of geek product. Hey, contact us and we'll talk about it. I mean, I can't guarantee it, but let's have a conversation because, you know, let's get some geeky stuff out there.
Don, what's the name?
I have drawn the winner, and it is actually a long time forumite.
Oh, really?
Our winner is Miral.
Miral?
Really?
Congratulations,
or
Miral.
Or is it Miral?
Miral.
I never know.
It's Miral.
It's Meral.
It's much classier that way.
But you say miscellaneous, so I don't know if I trust you.
So I will email you. As soon as this show is out, I'm going to email you through our forums, I guess, send a private message to you. Then you can send me your address back, and I will send this off as soon as I can get to a post office.
Woohoo!
Congratulations.
Yep, and thank you again, everybody, for going to the forum, starting up great conversation, not letting it spin out of control. We've got a lot of new people there, so everyone be nice. And come back to the forums and keep posting. We've got all sorts of good conversation.
By the way, I don't know if anyone noticed, there's a new subsection in the forums. It looks like some people are going to be doing some play-by-post RPGs.
Oh, okay, cool.
In one of the forums.
Cool.
So we should support that. I don't know how, but we should.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool.
Those of you who are going to be playing, let us know how Geeks On can support you.
Yeah, maybe we can put some maps or post some maps and stuff there. I mean, as long as it's not too crazy, we can...
If we can do a little segment where, like, we update people on the world events in our secret Geeks On play-by-mail. I don't know.
All right.
I can actually hear people tuning out, but...
Yes. Everybody have a great Geek Week.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about a few things about the Geeks On convention. We'll talk about it off the air. We'll also talk about, somebody said, Ask Forage should be a segment, which I thought could be
great,
very
segment.
Fun.
That's a great
to just go and ask Forage a question.
Okay, cool. We'll see if he'll be up for that.
All right.
All right. You guys have a good Geek Week.
Be well.
See you next time. Bye.
Lock it out. Keep it out.